You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Camille Doucet. It's Hello, good to have everybody. You here this morning. Hi.
Thank you.
So Camille, the question that we begin with is a big one, but it's just a way to start. Who are you? What do we need to know about you? Qualities, experiences, labels, whatever you want to start the conversation. How do we get to know you?
Okay, let's start with the label. I'm an artist, a teacher, a mother, a lover of cloud and rain.
Which we've now had some, yes.
Oh, isn't that grace?
It's a relief, yeah.
Oh. Gardener. And beyond that, I love life. Mm-hmm. I love this planet. I love people like you, who inquire all over the place about who are you?
Yep. And as an artist, you take that inside yourself and create from all of those experiences.
Whatever I love, I seem to live very much in my eyes, in what I see, both inside and outside. And I seem to have a facility with a paintbrush, so it comes out and it's a good marriage.
Good. So you also brought some music with you. What should we start with today?
How about our wonderful Joe Crookston, Home Baked, with a beautiful song that just goes very well with what Pamela just left with.
Fall down as the rain. Okay, here we go.
Trouble and the pain. And if I get to heaven, I will not stay. I'll turn myself around again and fall down as the rain. Fall down as the rain, fall down as the rain. Turn myself around again and fall down. Finally reach the ground, I'll soak into the sod, turn myself around again, come up as goldenrod, come up as goldenrod, come up as goldenrod, turn myself around again, come up as goldenrod, come up as goldenrod, come up as goldenrod, turn myself around again, come up as goldenrod. Then when I turn dry and brown, I'll lay me down to rest. Turn myself around again as part of an eagle's nest. Part of an eagle's nest, part of an eagle's nest. Turn myself around again as part of an eagle's nest. Part of an eagle's nest, part of an eagle's nest. Turn myself around again as part of an eagle's nest. Thank you. when that eagle learns to fly, I'll flutter from that tree. I turn myself around again as part of the mystery. Part of the mystery, part of the mystery. Turn myself around again as part of the mystery. Part of the mystery, part of the mystery. Turn myself around again as part of the mystery. When my life is over and I have gone away, I'm gonna leave this big old world and the trouble and the pain. And if I get to heaven, I will not stay. I'll turn myself around again and fall down as the rain. Fall down as the rain, fall down as the rain. Turn myself around again and fall down as the rain. Fall down as the rain, fall down as the rain. Turn myself around again and fall down as the rain. Fall down as the rain, fall down as the rain. Turn myself around again and fall down.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Camille Doucette. Camille, where you are now in life, what experiences have particularly helped to make the moment you're in now meaningful? What has brought you to this? And I know that's a huge question, but it helps to kind of see, you know, what the learning has been.
Mm-hmm. Well, 60 years of living in two different countries, it's hard to put in the next 5 minutes, but let's see.
Well, yeah, it's not don't try to compress it that much, but compress.
Let's see. I was born in a family with five children, very lively, Catholic. So already that's quite a
with five children.
Color,
so you're
right.
Are you the youngest or the
middle?
The middle.
That's why I'm so balanced. And
that's why you do a lot of observing.
Yeah, I guess I'm aware of before and after, up and down, and finding spirituality, mm-hmm. surviving Catholicism, finding art. Wonderful people have influenced me. A physics teacher made a big influence. So I have scientific thinking mm-hmm. a lot mm-hmm. Because I had uncles living in the countryside. I come from Montreal. I was born right in the city.
Right.
I have country farmer uncles. Mm-hmm. So every summer we would go there. So I had access to putting my feet in the grass and feeling the rain and the wind and putting my hands in the dirt. That totally changed my life. I came and now I live in the country. And just about every day I think of all the kids who have never put their feet in the grass
right.
around the world,
right.
who don't know that or who think it's unsafe.
Right, right. What changed in you when you realized that you could put your feet on the grass and dig your hands in the dirt and actually
everything in me was saying yes this joy, this uh-huh, love uh-huh. would well up. And I mean, it was just not there before. So that starting to follow this love just brought me here. As soon as I could, I knew I would leave the city.
Uh-huh.
Starting to be around the time I was a teenager, and I would come back from my uncle's place and I would be depressed. And it took me a couple of years before I realized it's because I was coming back from this to the city.
Right.
And it had that impact on me.
Wow. Wow. And when you realized it, did it make it clearer what about that experience was had changed you or was not being fed when you were in the city?
I don't know that I was that aware.
Not then.
Self-aware.
Not then. Yeah.
But I started planting a little garden in a very dark corner of the little bit of yard we had, and my carrots grew to be about an inch and a half.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But I was trying things. I was following something. I did not know how to get where. I was not even knowing where I wanted to get to. But I was following a path.
What was it like? I mean, how close are the siblings of your five? In terms of birth order? Were they born close together or far apart?
Well, my older sister was 10 months older than me. My younger sister and I were 3.5 years apart. So everybody was born in a span of 10 years, but I was the surprise.
Right. So, yeah. And you talked about it being a kind of a very vivacious or very active household.
Oh, yeah.
With all those, all those kids. Did you have, is this where you found your space?
No. I think the way we were raised, we were never asked what you like, who are you, like you're asking me today. So I didn't have a sense of self for the longest time. But there was a lot of, there was love, there was music, there was access to art. Like, there were always pencils and things to draw with in the house. Does that answer the question?
No. You were always active. And, I mean, I have four older sisters who were born, 18 to 28 months apart. And so, or maybe not. I mean, they average close to 2 years apart. And when they come together, we grew up in a 450 square foot house with a bedroom for my parents, a bedroom for the four sisters. Yep. And then I slept on the couch or the pantry, and my older brother slept on the back porch.
Right.
So, but my sisters have this capacity to fall into roles when they cook or when they do things together, because that's how they had to function. So they always had things, but really kind of having a self is a different experience when you are in an environment that is so active and people don't have time to step out of it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
To kind of have that self-reflection. And going away to the farm. I grew up on a subsistence farm, so we were all in that tight space, but we had 100 acres around us
that we could
kind of go out on. So we had both experiences. But I think I have a feel for what you're talking about, which is very engaged, but not autonomous or not self-defined.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The backyard was a parking lot. So we were so creative at inventing games there.
What did you play in the backyard?
Oh, well, hide and seek for sure. And the shadow and the light would be fire fields and cool fields to walk in. So you can imagine the dance that could create. Or laying down and looking at the clouds and imagining whatever, or following. One that would describe, okay, follow this tree and this roof and this la 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 la, and with a goal arriving at a certain place. And then it was your turn to create something else. Right. So there was always something to do.
Right. And people to do it with, which is...
And creativity. Yeah. So there were no boring moments. We were not bored kids.
And that puts a tremendous... that creates a positive depth and makes the poignancy of the need to kind of step out and kind of assume your own identity even more powerful. What other experiences? So we talked about the farm and your family, but what brought you to the States? What brought you? Because you said you've part of your what defines you is having lived in two countries.
Yeah, actually, in September I will have been here half my life. It's my friend. Where I was living was getting married to a woman from Ithaca that I befriended, and I came to their wedding. And after the wedding, months later, I came to visit them. And at that point, I had just terminated a 2-year piece of work. And so I didn't have really work in front of me. I was thinking of going back to school and working, studying Death and Dying. And that didn't exist 30 years ago. And he said, come here, Empire State College. You can create your own degree. So I came. And I got married, had children, and I've been here happily ever after.
which is an extreme summary.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were looking to make a life transition. Ithaca just happened to be the path, the place that you came to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What has kept you here?
I think this wondrous community. Ithaca is unique. It's one place in the world. There are people with creative thinking, some form of enlightened thinking, and there's quite a bit. Mm-hmm. It's easy to bond, and I have found, it's as if I found my family here. Even on the street where I live, we're meeting once a week for a meal, a community mm-hmm. meal. I mean, this is so meaningful.
Yeah.
And we can talk about everything and support one another, doing activism like We Are Seneca Lake and going and getting arrested. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, instead of despairing, a little activism is good.
Right. And how has your art changed? Or you wanted to study death and dying when you, and that was one of the things that you referred to. How have you, you know, managed to keep those, or have those interests continued to evolve?
Well, I did a degree. I worked at Hospicare mm-hmm. for about a year and a half, and then I started working with the birthing,
the little other children. Yeah.
And as I raised my young children, I started needing to have time by myself, so I would start drawing and painting, and that's how I started again, painting. And then parents of friends of my kids would say, can you teach my kid to paint? Can they come for the weekend? Or for a couple of hours.
Sure.
And that's how I started teaching.
Uh-huh.
Basically, that's how I started teaching now 25 years ago.
Right. Wow. Let's cut to music. What should we play next?
How about the Amy Glicklick, this wondrous voice from Ithaca.
And do you want to say anything about this particular piece?
Oh, not that particular one. This whole CD she has is music from Ireland and Jewish and African and Palestinian. It's wondrous. Yeah. And she is fluid into all these voices.
Yes. And the album is Mosaic, Songs of Many Traditions. And this particular song is Tulba.
Yai umma hi sifari finda ari li khwali yumma re meni lawa ga ya ar li ahwali dhali ta dawir ala li izwa ar talakihim yumma re
thank you.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report, and I'm your host, Eric Clay, and our guest on this hour is Camille Doucette. Camille, how have you changed? How have you, as a person, changed over these years? Mm-hmm. In ways that surprised you because you never thought that would change, or in ways that have become deeper than you could have imagined?
Well, I think I softened a lot, but I must say I did not even know I was rigid.
Well, but no, but that's, you know, yeah. We are who we are, and we discover, right. I sense of it in a certain sense, like a frozen stick of butter doesn't know that it can be soft until it's melted, you know.
There you go. Yeah, good example.
Yeah. So what happened to you? When did you discover that you were softening, and what did you discover had been rigid?
Wanting to control my world, needing to control my world, because there's so much harshness and violence and despair. Mm-hmm. And that awareness, I think my family were quite sensitive people, and my father was violent.
Uh-huh. He didn't know how to manage his sensitivities, to say the very least, maybe.
Right, And he did not know how to be tender and soft around young people.
Right.
Or
right.
just receive. So over the years, I did all sorts of things, meditation, psychological process, group processes. A wondrous part of it was the hidden treasure at Light on the Hill, right here in Van Etten. And all of these had quite an impact on, first of all, it made me see me, right. Like give me this feedback, these mirrors. And then you start realizing also by seeing other people and releasing your story gives you a chance to set it down and have access to other resources in you, having right. other models that can inspire you too.
Right, right. So when a parent is so emotionally dominant and I think you used the word, what was the?
Violent.
Violent. Mm-hmm. It sets up like almost an us against them. Sometimes it can with the children, so that mm-hmm. you manage yourselves kind of in defensive mode or protective mm-hmm. mode. So I kind of sense that. When did you learn that you could relax?
Let me see. I think it's when I started doing meditation when I was a young adult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in Canada,
mm-hmm. as a young adult. Because the image as I have is I was seeking. I was doing astronomy, building a telescope when I was a teenager. I was achieving in school. I was going for, you know, that's the part of me that was trying to reach and control. And
driven.
Yeah, driven. And then when I started doing meditations, like, oh, this is a door on another world. We're not talking about the same planet.
Right.
And there's life there.
Right.
There's breath. Yeah.
Right. And it feeds you. Oops. Pardon me as I adjust the microphone.
He's feeding me the microphone.
just so that we can hear your story. Yes. What has your relationship, how do you discover at times that there are elements of that same rigidity, or have you pretty well felt like you have been able to steer clear of it? Because I'm asking because sometimes we rediscover when we've emerged or grown up in environments where we've had to be, you know, on an agenda mm-hmm. to get out, mm-hmm. so to speak. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to completely let go of that because that's become such a habit.
Mm-hmm. You know? That's interesting. There's a lot of relaxation in my life. I feel like I'm semi-retired, so uh-huh. I can really enjoy whatever I do. And at the same time, if you come to my house, everything is orderly. It's not cluttered. So I have a certain amount of control and maybe even rigidity. My sweetheart who's has to maneuver around all my need for cleanliness and clarity and zen, you know.
Right. Your need for both order and control.
Yeah. 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 And at the same time, for his own happiness and his own need to put himself down and relax.
Right.
It's a dance.
No, I understand. I have often wondered, sometimes art is about, saying these are the conventions and I want to present it in a way that's different, which is this is how I have been kind of led to be controlled or managed, but I want to show that there's something else here. And sometimes art is just as we kind of started, there's a careful taking in of things, and you just happen to push them out in a way that gives them a new form because you just took them in so deeply. You know, how has your art changed over the years?
My art, not my heart.
Art and heart. I'm getting at the same. Yeah, actually, yeah. There is a pun there.
Yeah. Well, they go very well hand in hand if have such things. Yeah.
They beat in syncopation.
It's more and more nature. What I have been painting has more and more to do with nature and light. Mm-hmm. So trees are my great love. And so there will always be a certain light or a certain atmosphere around the tree. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's what I have to say, I guess, is the breath of nature.
So now you are taking what is given and highlighting it in a certain way or lifting it up, taking it out and painting it.
I'm not sure I'm doing it in a certain way. I'm doing it. It does itself. It comes out of me. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. That's more what I'm. As you engage it, it comes through and out of you.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And my hands are kind of the middleman.
Right. Let's cut to music because there are a couple more things you want to play, and I want to get the ones that we can in. So you wanted to play a song from Canada.
Gilles Vigneault was a famous singer and poet who came from way out in the boonies in Canada with this incredible gift with words. Not a great voice, but such a passion. So just listen. He's talking about les gens de mon pays, which means the people of my country.
Uh-huh. Here we go.
Les gens de mon pays, ce sont gens de parole et gens de causerie qui parlent pour s'entendre et parlent pour parler. Il faut les écouter, c'est parfois vérité et c'est parfois mensonge, mais la plupart du temps, c'est le bonheur qui dit comme il faudra de temps pour saisir le bonheur à travers la misère emmaillée au plaisir tant d'en rêver tout haut que d'en parler à l'aise. Parlant de mon pays, je vous entends parler et j'en ai danse aux pieds et musique aux oreilles et du loin au plus loin de ce nez je désire où vous vous entêtez à choquer vos villages. Je vous répéterai vos parlers et vos dires, vos propos et parlures jusqu'à perdre mon nom, vos voix tant écoutées pour qu'il ne reste plus de moi-même qu'un peu de votre écho sonore. Je vous entends jaser sur le perron des portes et de chaque côté des cléons, des clôtures. Je vous entends chanter dans ma demi-saison votre trop court été et mon hiver si long. Je vous entends rêver dans les soirs de doutant. Il est question de vent, de vente et de gréement, de labours à finir, d'espoirs et de récoltes, d'amour et du voisin qui veut marier sa fille. Voix noire, voix durcie, d'écorce et de cordage, voix des pays plein champ et voix des amoureux, douces voix attendries, des amours du village, voix les beaux airs anciens, dont on s'ennuie en ville, puis ailleurs ridicule, des palabres et sparages, magasin général et restaurant du coin, les ponts, les quais, les gares, tous vos cris maritimes atteignent ma fenêtre et m'arrachent l'oreille. Est-ce vous que j'appelle, ou vous qui m'appelez, langage de mon père et patois 17e, vous me faites voyage, mal et mélancolie, vous me faites plaisir et sagesse et folie. Il n'est coin de la terre où je ne vous entende, il n'est coin de ma vie à l'abri de vos bruits, il n'est chanson de moi qui ne soit toute faite avec vos mots, vos pas, avec votre musique. Je vous entends rêver douce comme rivière, je vous entends claquer comme voile du large, je vous entends gronder comme chute en montagne, je vous entends rouler comme Paris de poudre, je vous entends monter comme un grain de 4 heures, je vous entends cogner comme un mer en falaise, je vous entends passer comme un glace en débâcle, je vous entends demain parler de liberté.
And that was Gilles Vigneault and The People of My Country in English. And I won't try to say it in French, although Camille may. You were telling me as this was playing that song about the people of my country is where you come from. It's in French and it's from French Canada. But where... You are now about to become what, an American citizen?
That's correct.
Yes. So what is it about now the people of your two countries or
Well, Gilles Vigneault represent people of my country when I was born.
I see.
I mean, he's all inside of me. I hear his voice and I overflow. But that's an era that's gone. He's talking about working in the woods and the farm and all that.
And people don't do that, or it's become industrialized, or it's become modern.
I mean,
in ways.
It's a minuscule part of
like it is here.
Boy, have I changed since then. And becoming a citizen, I decided, you guys, you need help this fall.
So that explains the timing of your
So. I've been here 30 years. I feel very, very connected to America and to the world. I mean, you cannot come from another country, come to America, and be insular to America. My antennas have just grown being here because I have this, I feel America from outside.
So
as an outsider and as an insider.
You're here, but you're experiencing it as an outsider. So what are your antenna picking up on?
Oh, boy. Are you sure we can say that on the radio?
Well, yeah.
there's so much tremendous distress in the world. This rushing at us. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are experiencing all these refugees, black lives, loss of habitats, of species. And sometimes I feel like Ithaca is special. I feel Ithaca, people are very sensitive. We can talk about that. But it sounds like there's so little of that conversation in America at large. So I have these antennas, and I'm making a broad statement here.
Yeah,
sensitive people
are
everywhere,
right? And I think we the news that we hear about America is not the conversations that are happening in people's homes,
right?
And I think that's a serious issue. But the issue that you've raised is there is a sense of profound distress and distress that has implications that are almost, I want to say, eternal in their profoundness, the profound issues that are in a sense cataclysmic.
Mm-hmm.
And from my own background, theological background, in a certain sense, there's almost an apocalyptic tone that everybody fears that the life that they want or they desire is slipping out of reach, and we're in for some extremely...
Change.
Well, not mm-hmm. just change, but brutal, violent, cataclysmic mm-hmm. change. And I heard that a bit in the distress, in the word, your use of the word distress mm-hmm. so emphatically, mm-hmm. and you're questioning whether you could even say, you know, what's mm-hmm. going on here. How, as a person who lives both here and not here, you know, with a seeing it, I mean, what do you think we can do to face the distress and the genuine fear in all quarters about losing lives that people aspire to but don't necessarily see as viable anymore?
To me, it's so clear. If you feel sure. despair, find a cause and go into action. Do anything you can, however small.
Even if that puts you in action in opposition to other people who found a different cause?
Well, the amazing thing yeah. is you create community. You will find other people who believe like you, who feel like you, who care.
Sure. So
and that community builds your trust, your hope. Mm-hmm. It replaces the fear with possibilities, or it doesn't remove the fears completely, but it empowers you.
Right. So what I'm inferring from what you're saying is that the despair tends to lead to isolation.
Yes, and taking, exactly.
And then you're saying by finding exactly. a cause, mm-hmm. taking on an agenda, you then find others who have a similar cause, and that in that part you discover community, which takes you out of
Absolutely.
Your isolation.
Absolutely. Yep.
And I'm going to project here a little bit, because when most people discover community, they discover internal conflict. They have that communities are places where people share a lot, but they also have a lot of there's a lot to work through.
Mm-hmm.
Because we
yeah.
each value things in the ways, specific yeah. ways we value them, and that's not doesn't align well with others.
Indeed.
And we have to figure that out.
Indeed, but the focus of what brought you to community, mm-hmm. if that is where your energy is going, it won't go into the other problems that might come up. If you keep your eyes on to what your heart is telling you needs change, and you're putting your action there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't need to stick to any community that doesn't work or to individuals that
right,
create
right.
a problem.
Right, right. I guess my understanding of the times we live in is that we need to be more skillful at conflict, because we have many different and precious things that need to be honored.
Mm-hmm.
And we're only going to figure that out
if we
can engage in
yeah.
conflict in ways that does not totally annihilate each other in the process.
Amen.
And so for me, the image that is most central is that the body without tension is a corpse. The body that has muscles in opposition to each other actually moves and mm-hmm. dances and has some grace, and the food moves through it and stuff. But without tension, we have nothing. And without conflict,
okay.
we have nothing. So, but we don't know how to do it well, and we're at each other's throats.
I just want to say that sure. maybe we're enlightened too. So that's just another possibility. The body with tension might be that of somebody in a moment of enlightenment. But
uh-huh. Perhaps.
But enlightened
in a moment
to
of stasis, or in a moment
okay.
of stillness.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you move, it's back.
Yes,
yeah.
yes, so, that's true.
And,
okay.
and we're having trouble moving into the future.
Yeah.
And knowing how to do that without...
Without killing one another.
Yes.
With
literally
having space
one,
for...
Yeah.
yeah. Whichever way you can bring what is the best in you and receive or encourage or empower what's the best in the next person.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is perfect. You will always find conflicts. Even within yourself, there's conflict.
And maybe the peace that passes understanding is that there is peace or serenity within the conflict,
mm.
that the tension is its own grace.
Beautiful. Yeah, I'm going with that.
And But we don't hear that talked about, mm-hmm. because we tend to create mm-hmm. winner take all. You know, it's this or it's that, you mm-hmm. know.
It cannot be that anymore. Yeah, it has to be all together in this.
Yeah. And I don't what I fear mm-hmm. is that I don't see leaders who are able to say it has to be all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Without saying that it has to be each particular right. individual
that
and
we
group.
Are all needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that each group has its own specific experience of harm and of harming others, and they're not the same and they're not equal, but we just have to focus on how do we honor it all and move forward. I'm rambling into generalities. So you have... You're claiming your American citizenship so you can vote this fall,
mm-hmm.
and it's a continuation of living where you are.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And being rooted where you've been planted.
Beautiful. Yes. So,
What does the future hold for your personal work, for your own activism? You talk about being semi-retired, or at least approaching life with that attitude that you're not striving,
mm-hmm.
but that you are being, mm-hmm. probably as much as doing.
Right.
You know, where does this next phase take you?
Well, a couple of... 6 years ago, we started working on banning fracking, going to... Mm-hmm. So from there, I went into Solar Tompkins mm-hmm. and Anchorage Solar. Sure. And then from there, we are Seneca Lake, trying to stop the building enormous infrastructure there to hold methane and all sorts
natural
of...
gas, sure.
So there's already a movement that I kind of... part of, and it's evolving and changing, and going on the walk with Black Lives Matter, who knows mm-hmm. what's the next, but there's no stopping now.
Right.
There's a need, and I have time, action, and I don't know my future. Isn't that wonderful?
Well, that is exactly wonderful. That is would you let's cut briefly to music, and then I want to come back to a set of spiritual questions. Did you want to go to the Strauss piece?
Yes, Walter Strauss, yes. who used to live in Ithaca, virtuoso musician. This piece I love. It's just pure beauty.
For some reason, I'm having a hard time bringing it up, so let me try it again here. For some reason, I am not able to get this piece.
Sorry, Walter.
Okay, it seems...
Thank you.
That's Walter Strauss with a traditional West African piece, Djembassé. Camille, the question that I'd like to end the show with is, what do you do to restore yourself emotionally, intellectually, physically, daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, whatever? What do you do to restore yourself, and how do you know that it's time, I need to do something? When do you see the need to do that?
When I'm going too fast, I start spinning. I hear it in my tone of voice when I ask things.
What do you hear in your tone of voice?
Impatience.
Uh-huh, okay, yes.
That I want things to have already been done.
Right.
So I'm obviously asking something impossible. So.
Or not necessary, or not timely. I mean, it doesn't have to be impossible.
Well, impossible if the impatience is happening now and I wanted it done.
Yeah.
You know, I'm already out of sync with my own and with the world around me.
Right.
So I will breathe. I do meditation. I walk in the woods. I mean, any window from my house, you see nature. So I look at the wind in the trees, or the rain, or fireflies. Oh, fireflies.
Yes.
Or just in the morning, if I wake up and I already feel like I'm supposed to jump out of bed, I will hold myself in bed and listen to the sound outside or inside, coffee being ground, or not jump. Just take the time, listen to the rain on the roof. Or if I really have to just get up and rush, I pay attention to one breath from the beginning to the end. And if I'm not able to, I start over again to the next breath. And sometimes I have to do it with 10 breaths before I'm really aware of one full breath.
Right.
And by then, I have slowed down. My actions are more effective again. Mm-hmm. I'm becoming more in line with how the day is unfolding, where it needs to go.
Right. Specifically, when did you learn that? How did you learn that practice? Is that something you came up with on your own? Or is that something you learned from somebody's suggestion? Or?
I've been doing meditation now for about 40 years. So who knows what distillation it is.
Right. But I'm particularly impressed by the notion that you don't jump out of bed. You take the time to sense your environment, to sense your breath, to slow your mind, and then to get up. That's the first time I've ever heard that described.
Huh.
And it sounds like a very, very effective practice. I mean, I can see it being extremely effective, and you witness to it.
If I'm jumping out of bed, or sometimes I'm in the kitchen and I find myself spinning, like I'm touching this and that, and I'm going over there, and I'm not here. I'm not present in my body. I'm not really cooking. I don't know where I am, and I'm lost. So I have to slow down. So I have learned over the years that if I'm going too fast, I'm not here.
Right.
So it's the first moment in the morning is delicious. If it's not delicious, something's wrong.
Uh-huh.
So I have to slow down.
What practice? So you said you've meditated for 40 years or nearly 40 years. Do you still do that on a regular daily basis? Or
no. I would say I do it in an irregular basis. A mix of having the time or thinking about it. Just whenever I remember when I can take a breath. I don't need to sit in 15 minutes or half an hour to meditate.
Right.
But also with my partner, we do meditation. I go on retreat. We do days of silence. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How often?
Well, right now we're engaged with a course, and there's a full day of retreat once every season, and 2 hours every month as a group.
Right. And the silence, the days of silence. How often do you engage in that?
Oh, that's once a season.
Yeah, okay, once a season. Sure, sure. Do you this practice that works for you, has your family, have your siblings seen it? Do you share it with them? How is it? Is it something you benefit quietly from, or is it something that you've been able to share?
You mean with my children, for
example?
With
your children,
not
or
my
with
siblings?
Your siblings, or yeah.
Well, with my siblings,
it's more complicated. Usually,
yeah, it's more complicated, but we have all kind of developed some spiritual dimension to our lives. Mm-hmm. With my children, I certainly have shared that. Uh-huh. Absolutely, we used to have Shabbos dinners. Mm-hmm. I'm not Jewish, but my husband was, and it, to me, the spiritual part of sharing something in day to day around a meal was wondrous.
Yes.
So, and I remember my son saying, you know, I would talk about Gandhi, Mother Teresa, and he would say, one time he was 5 years old, and he said to me, "Yeah, there are many people like that, and probably many we don't know.
Uh-huh.
You know, he was already aware that in this world there's goodness, there's people who want to do what's right and have a dimension, a spiritual dimension.
Right, and it's in a modest way that isn't about fame or mythic presence.
Right, it doesn't need to be very big and on the screen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. They rarely make it on the screen, actually.
Right, right, and we have to watch. We have to be alive and present to see them.
To see them and to recognize that we have strands of that in us.
In ourselves.
It's not out there.
Right.
It's here.
Right.
It just needs tender caring.
Camille, it's been really wonderful to get to know you. And you wanted to close with a samite piece. Do you want to say anything about it before we play it?
Another wonderful, once local, once from far away, now in Syracuse.
Or Tully, I think.
Yeah, Tully. Wonderful spirit. Well, and thank you, Eric.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.